Welcome to the Igniting Souls podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner. Carrie believes if you want to experience clarity in business and in life, then discovering who you are, why you're here, and where you're going is a must. The Igniting Souls podcast is dedicated to help you do just this. And now, here's Carrie.
Why should people listen to this today? Like, give us some quick high points and then we'll introduce who is Alex, who is Tom.
Sure. Yeah. Well, as you can imagine, Carrie, when you talk about incentive plans, people's eyes don't light up. And so, the value I think of today, Tom and I have years of experience on this and it's been in our heads, like this whole concept been in our heads for years. We said, let's get this down and get it out to the world and just share this, because we've seen a lot of things work and a lot of things not work around incentive plans, especially as it relates to like employee engagement. And so some of the highlights and nuggets, tidbits that we can share tonight, I think would be interesting, especially if you're an entrepreneur or business owner or, you know, in executive position. So we're excited to share that, really help anybody that we can.
I love it.
I think that, one of the things people should get out of tonight is a kind of the common mistakes behind and why is an incentive plan important? I mean, you know, a lot of people think about it and they're like, yeah, I kind of want to do an incentive plan. I'd like to reward my employees, but yeah, it's just complicated. So, how do you actually do that in a way that changes behavior? Because a fundamental belief that Alex and I have is that an incentive plan that doesn't change behavior is just a bonus, which is just an entitlement. Ooh. And so whatever you do has to change the behavior of people in the organization. And I hope that's what people get out of this today.
That is gold. I love that. Give us some background, Tom, because you know what's funny? Your other book, What the Heck is EOS? By Gina Wickman. You probably don't know this, but we had bought a bunch of copies of these and our team was reading them before we even met you. And then all of a sudden, you know, we get to publish you. But tell us a little bit about this book and tell us a little bit about your background. And then we'll go to Alex because I have his audio book and we're going to talk about that.
Sure. So I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. My family had a couple of businesses, 25, 50 million respectively.
Wow.
I ended up overseas for about 8 years working in a region where all the countries get along really well. So I had India, Pakistan, Israel, Lebanon, and a couple of other countries. Wow. And ended up starting three of my own companies there. And then eventually got to ownership thinking with Alex and really was just inspired by the fact that we can teach employees about financial literacy. Mm. And I think there are many gaps in our educational system, one of which is that we don't teach people about how a business actually works. Mm. That's what you're doing. I mean, when you ask an employee, hey, our company generated $20 million in revenue last year, what percent is profit? The average answer is 40 to 50%. And we all know that's not true.
Wow.
And so I'm just really intrigued by how do we teach them about the business of business? And more importantly, and I think Alex can riff on this in a second, but what we were really enthralled with was the fact that we could actually help people apply this to their personal lives.
Mm.
And realize that company income is the same as you getting a paycheck. How do you manage that and apply those business lessons to, you know, actual business? And that led us to incentives. And how, as you were saying, Carrie, how do you reward people for doing a great job?
Yes.
But, you know, for adding value, not for just showing up 200 days breathing.
Yes.
Yeah. This has been a passion for since 1996 is probably the inception when it started getting planted into my brain. And my father was in business in Columbus. He was on a lot of boards and he was with this group called the Central Ohio Center for Economic Education, which basically would teach teachers how to teach economics to kids. Mm. And so they had courses. And he thought, as he was on this board, that maybe there's a business idea in teaching employees about economics and business. And so my brother and I started the business back then. And the idea was financial literacy, as Tom mm-hmm. was saying, and to try to help employees. The idea is that in the absence of information, people just make stuff up.
And
so you have a choice as a business owner. You can not share anything, and then you have to deal with whatever people think, or you can start to share some information about the company. A lot of business owners we found don't believe that employees have the capability to understand like basic business. And it's just not true. But like Tom said at the beginning, prior to doing any education, we would survey the employees and ask them, about profit and these kind of things. And the results were always, 30, 50, 60%. I've even seen guesses of 100% of sales is profit. And wow. That's just sort of not really understanding how sort of an income statement works. And so we boiled it down to its basics and really started to roll this out. What we found was employees became really appreciative, number one, of knowing it. It built trust in the organization because management and leadership's sharing this kind of usually confidential information with everybody. And then you're arming the workforce with tools to become more actively engaged in like pulling different levers that help the company improve profitability or increase efficiency, the customers more. And it became really exciting to see businesses kind of culturally shift just by sharing more information. And then you bolt on sort of this, hey, we're growing all this profit. Let's share some of it with the people who are making the change, the stakeholders, if you will. And it really became this kind of full system. It was a lot of fun. And so that was kind of the inception. And it was great. Tom and I met at Ownership Thinking. And then we both got just enthralled with this system called the Entrepreneurial Operating System, or EOS. Yes. Which Carrie, and that's been just a really fun ride for everybody. So it's a nice collection when you take the operating system paired with sort of the ProfitWorks philosophy of transparency, business literacy, and incentive plan design.
And Alex, I think that's an important point, which is that you have to have an operating system before you put in place an incentive plan.
Ooh.
Because if you don't, then you're just going to be spinning your wheels, going to the next flavor of the month. So that's the baseline. And then after that, you have to decide, what type of incentive plan do we want? What's our payout structure? And then more importantly, probably, is what are the tools that we use? And Alex, maybe you can talk a little bit about the tension tool we talked about and that positive anxiety. But how do we get tools into their hands so they can actually make an impact on profitability? It's one thing to share the numbers, but it's another thing to give employees tools where they can actually impact profitability.
Wow. So I'm seeing this process unfold right before my eyes. One of the first steps I'm hearing is transparency. So if you're a business owner and you're not sharing the numbers with your people, I guess that would be a sign, what would you say, guys, of maybe unhealthiness or fear or trust or something like
that? Yeah, it could be fear. Now, it's very, to dip a toe in the water to start to share, which was really sort of privately held information, and to take that risk is it takes some courage, right, to do that. And I would sort of imagine a spectrum of like totally closed book, sharing nothing, all the way over to like what Tom and I call radical transparency, which is like sharing salaries and stuff. And you don't have to go there, but find your comfort zone and maybe go a little less comfortable. Just go a little bit further, and you'll start to see, and maybe start with different levels in the organization to share that. And it's really awesome to see, number one, how appreciative they are, because it does build trust. You start sharing it, and then they start saying, this is cool, this is interesting. As Tom said, you can compare it to personal finance. And so a lot of folks who might live paycheck to paycheck start to think longer term, and they appreciate that. Maybe they're saving money more than before they knew this stuff. They think about, mortgage and paying their bills, and maybe I don't need to eat out so much. I can shop, and buy groceries instead of, expensive groceries. So they start to cut costs and drive profitability to their own personal bottom line and
interesting
that psychology into the business. Really.
And Alex, to your point, you know, one of the stories that I always tell employees, and you and I have worked with tens of thousands of employees, but one of the things that I always talk about is how I stopped going to that coffee store that starts with an S, you know, and paying $5 for a cup of coffee. Instead, I go to my local gas station, I pay $1.50. I get the same caffeine effect, which is really what I want. But you think about that. You do that every day for a year. How much money did you save? $1,377. Yeah. You know, think about that. That's a vacation for a lot of people. So, or a pretty sweet bump in their paycheck. So it's really about not only applying these things to business, but then how do they improve their own lives? And I think that's what Alex and I really get off on is just helping people improve their life. And I think that's pretty cool.
It is cool.
Very cool. So it starts with transparency. It moves to financial literacy, both professionally, and then it seeps into personally. You just shared something that's very controversial. I mean, I even worked in a Starbucks. No. Sharing people's salary. You actually have certain businesses that are that transparent. And what would be the advantage? What's the pros and cons of a culture like that?
Yeah, I'll say, Kerry, that's very unusual. It's the exception. That also would probably be a bell-shaped curve. That would be like pretty extreme. I've seen a handful of companies that do that, but most are sharing like profit and loss, like income statement information, maybe a little bit of cash flow, rarely balance sheet stuff. If you're thinking, you know, about the three basic financial statements. So really staying away from salaries and that kind of thing, typically. Now, when we're designing the incentive plans, we do get into like total comp, you know, pictures, like what is that view? Because oftentimes what somebody's making isn't exactly what the whole paycheck is when you take in all the other, you know, sort of benefits of working in the business. And then you throw on this self-funded incentive plan, which is a key principle that Tom and I believe in, is that the compensation, that the incentive plan has to pay for itself. You know, so it's got to be found money, incremental profit over some kind of trigger or threshold that protects the company, because the greater good of the organization is certainly most important. If the organization's not there, we can't take care of ourselves. So we got to put the organization first and then protect the company with some kind of threshold that allows for return on investment and paying down debt and taxes, of course, and any reinvestment in the business. But then found money above that is shared with the people who have done the hard work to find that money, you know, through increasing operational efficiencies or working on pricing within sales or upselling or getting referrals or just getting creative. You know, it's just a lot of cool fun.
That is good.
Alex, maybe you can talk to why this generates trust and why this program that we're talking about actually works generate that trust.
Let me pull up this. This is in the Achieve Your Vision book, but the Trust Builders, because I have a chapter in here called, you know, Trust, and Trust Builders versus Trust Destroyers, which is this graphic over here. Transparency is the first one I put there, like for Trust Builders. And the Trust Destroyer would be sort of a hidden agenda. So like not sharing information. Follow through, like doing what you say you're going to do would be a Trust Builder versus say one thing and do another. And so the comment there that trust is rare, it is true on the greater side of things, but thankfully the companies we get to work with are the types of companies that want to be their best. And so they typically, we see higher levels of trust in the types of companies we get to work with and that are attracted to this type of philosophy as well. Open and honest is a trust builder. So take this pandemic, right? A lot of businesses just really had to be completely transparent with the state of affairs. A lot of furloughs, a lot of pay cuts, but really trying to rally the troops into this sense of we're all in this together. And that builds trust, that camaraderie there, which is powerful. So, and Tom and I talk about this a few times in ProfitWorks, the book, which is it's the incentive plan is not going to manage your people. It's got to be great leadership and great management that really builds the culture. The incentive plan is simply a tool. And so that's an important sort of piece to understand. The incentive plan doesn't necessarily directly build trust. It's a component of a lot of other elements. If you picture it like almost like a snowball, you're just packing all these different pieces onto it to build trust in the organization. A fairness, delegation, like trusting people to take a project and run with it. Having a handful of rules instead of a big complex employee manual and that kind of thing. Micromanagement is not going to help trust. And then a results-based workplace. But those pieces, and you can imagine trust is certainly elusive. It's tough to get your hands around. Stephen Covey talks a lot about trust deposits, almost like a bank account.
Yeah.
And relationships. So with a leadership team to the workforce, making deposits to build that up, because there's going to be occasional withdrawals, but as long as there's a positive balance, it can really strengthen the culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and Alex, I saw a note from Joyce asking about self-funded. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Could you talk to that, and maybe I'll jump in on that as well.
Sure. Yeah, and I sort of alluded to this before. It means that it pays for itself, meaning it doesn't come off like dollar one, if you know what I mean, because the company has obligations that in order to stay in business. And so there's a certain level of profit that has to be created before the incentive kicks in. And companies, let's say a company does like 10% profit. Mm-hmm. So if they do $1 million in sales, they have $100,000 at the bottom line. And, you know, that's the bottom line is kind of like, you know, net income or profit, but they've got to pay about almost half of that to the government in taxes. So now you're down to 50,000. Now there's all these people that took the risk and they need some distribution, some return on their investment. So there's a little bit gone there. And then you might have some debt you have to pay down. And so you start to get down that 100,000 is suddenly gone. So the self-funded piece would be setting an incentive threshold. Let's say it's at 100,000 and anything above that, we're going to pay a percentage of that into the profit sharing or the incentive plan pool. But in order to find that money, the employees need tools. They need to have some awareness of that truth or that situation around that income statement with $1 million and 100,000 there. You have to kind of understand what the game is. And then the tools, you arm them with like, hey, if we reduce rework or we do it right the first time, or you know, we talk to the customer about referrals and get new business from new clients or those kinds of conversations, the employees start to become actively involved in self-funding that. Instead of 100,000, maybe it's 150,000 to the bottom line, and they get a portion of that 50,000 incremental profit. I don't know if that makes sense.
That makes a ton of sense. Wow. So, I mean, this is, it might seem basic to you guys, because you're the authors, but this is really foundational, mind-blowing stuff. I mean, why do businesses not get to this level? Because they're, I think your subtitle says it, complexity. Is that, do they think it's too difficult?
Tom, you want to start that?
No, I would toss it to you.
All right. So this is actually where it started, Carrie. So with the concept, and I have it up here, actually, I'll just show you this word right up there. Boom. Simplify, right? As a business grows, the business is going to get more complex. You're going to have more customers, more employees, more product, services, everything. Complexity is going to happen as you grow a business. So everything that you can simplify, please do. And what I've seen in a lot of incentive plan errors, I'd say, is that we overthink it and we try to second guess it. And we start to bolt on little incentives all over the organization. And like, these guys do this, so we're going to put an incentive on that. And these guys do this, and these folks over here. So we have like, you have to administer all these plans, and it can take hours and hours and hours of somebody's time just to calculate all the payouts and so forth. And so our philosophy is to step back, ideally get rid of all that, and focus everybody on the score at the end of the game, which is profit. Profit works.
Hey.
And so it's simple. It's one number. It truly is the score at the end of the game, because you can have loads of sales. Like, imagine a company that does $100 million in sales, makes $1 million in profit. Well, that's 1%. If you imagine another company that does $10 million in sales and has the same $1 million in profit, that's 10%. It's same $1 million though. It's much easier to be a $10 million company making $1 million than a $100 million company making. That's a lot simpler, right? So, but we want to place that incentive in a most simple way at that bottom line, and then teach everybody how to improve it, and then have them share in that.
Yeah, and Alex, let me jump in on that, which is that as human beings, we're really good at making things seem complex, right? We like to take ideas and make them as complex as possible. And, you know, I got an MBA from Duke and, you know, I did this and I did that. And so, you know, I have all these theories going on. And at the end of the day, though, what Alex is saying is that it comes down to just making it simple. And that is the hardest thing for us to do as human beings, is just to keep it simple and be comfortable with that. Because we get really uncomfortable with, you know, something that's simple, and instead we try and make it complex. And so, you know, as Tanisha is saying there, that as the business grows, it does have more complex needs. And your challenge, and what Alex and I would ask you to do as a leader, is to simplify, to take it and just boil it back to your basic elements of what you need to do. And that could be hiring 5% of your customers. You know, who knows?
Carrie, I'll add one thing to that, because if you remember, when we started this book, we were talking about titling the book like something around tension, right? Like creating.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
You remember that? And so the simplicity of the incentive plan design became sort of the focus there, the complexity, and then trying to create simplicity there. And that, as we discovered as we were writing the book, is about 10% of the battle. Like making something simple, and we've got the formula in the book, is fairly easy. The toughest part, the part that takes intention, and this is the one word, intention, is that we have to create a culture of engagement there. And so within the book, we've provided a bunch of tools that business owners, entrepreneurs can use to try to be intentional about enrolling the workforce in driving improved profitability to help put more money in their own pockets. And this graphic here, this is beautiful. This is called the Yerkes-Dodson Law. And this is on, you know, Wikipedia. You can look it up. But it basically says this. Yep, you have tension low to high on the x-axis. You have performance low to high on the y-axis. And as tension or pressure or anxiety, you could use any of those words, increases, performance increases until it doesn't, you know, until it doesn't. And the point there is, if you look, if there's no tension, if you look the far sort of bottom left of this, if there's no tension in organization, performance is fairly mediocre. Might even be low or underperforming like an industry average. And as business owners and leaders, the management team really starts to instill a higher level of performance, higher levels of expectations, let's say, like scorecards, measurables, putting names on scorecards, having weekly meetings where you have accountability built in there, that adds a level of tension. People are like, oh my gosh, I have to do this by next week. They feel a little bit of pressure. That's a good thing. Up to a point. So you go from the left here where there's possibly some entitlement to the middle where there's earning, and then to the far right, if you're putting way too much pressure or too much tension, there's performance drops back down, and that's a culture of fear. You know, people aren't worried about doing a great job. They're worrying about not getting fired. They're worried about not getting yelled at, right? So these studies started in the 60s around athletes. And if you imagine, Carrie, if you said, I'm going to run a marathon in 6 months, what would you start doing?
6 months? I'd start training, or is it too long? It's too long. It's too
maybe.
Long.
I'd get a coach, right? You would maybe get a calendar and you'd say, this week I'm going to do this. Next week I'm going to do that. You'd start getting disciplined. You might start eating better. You'd start going to sleep earlier. Maybe maybe not drinking as much or whatever, but getting rest and getting healthy, right? You'd put pressure. You'd add tension to your life to try to show up at the starting line and really have, you know, perform, right? You want that higher level of performance. But if you overtrain and you stress out and you don't even get to the starting line because you're all cramped up and you can't even run the race, that's on that right side. There's too much tension. So there's an art from a leader's perspective to finding that balance in the middle of that curve. It's really cool. It's fascinating.
And you know, Alex, one of the things that you and I have seen is that people, yes, Joyce, pressure, not stress. We don't want stress, but we want pressure.
Yeah.
And I liken it to on that left side of the graphic, that's, and I hope I don't insult anybody here, but I might, that's any state's Department of Motor Vehicles. They really don't care. You know, they're right over there. There's no pressure. There's no tension. There's no stress. And if you go into that office, they don't really care if you get done in 20 minutes or 4 hours. You know, they're just sitting in that chair. And I'll tell you that what Alex and I have seen is that those people are miserable.
Yeah.
They are not happy people. And you don't want to go to the far side, you know, the dark side either, where there's so much pressure that people are not, you know, they're so stressed out, they can't get anything functionally done. And as leaders, you have to decide, and we talk about this in the book, what's that middle zone that really helps you? And what Alex and I have found is that people want a little bit of pressure. They want a little bit of tension. They want to know what good looks like. They want to know what great looks like. And I ask this to our clients, and Alex and I are working with them all the time. You know, would you rather be the starting quarterback at, you know, Southwest, I don't know,
Methodist,
Ball State, you know, whatever, University of Montana? Or I hope I didn't insult anybody there. Or would you rather be the number two quarterback at Alabama?
Or Ohio State.
Right? Sorry. You know, I'd rather be number two at Alabama than playing, you know, at that other school. Because that's more rewarding for me. But you, Alex, know, you have to add to that.
Tom, you reminded me of it. It kind of comes back to people being satisfied or fulfilled at work. There is an element of responsibility that we have as leaders to provide a sense of purpose, a sense of direction, which kind of gets back to that operating system. And one thing that Tom and I kind of realized as we were learning about the employee engagement side of things is that it's very difficult to engage the employees if we don't have an aligned leadership team that really has a clear vision on where they want to go, how they want to get there, and really a healthy team. And so having a sense of why we're in business, why we do what we do, core values, all those sort of basics that are the foundational pieces of an operating system where you have leadership team alignment first, that becomes kind of a locomotive. And then you have the employee engagement who they can grab an oar, they can, you know, whatever metaphor you want to use, but they want to get in line and help the leadership team and help the whole company achieve its vision. So we got to do operating system first, you know, employee engagement second, incentive plan, certainly a great tool, and then reinforce it is the little caboose.
Wow.
Could you repeat those three things from Lencioni's signs of a miserable job? Questions about that.
Oh, sure. Irrelevance, immeasurability, and anonymity, like anonymous, like who's like, see the guy in the hallway, like, I hired that guy, I don't remember his name, that kind of stuff. You're like, oh, I feel like a number, you know, that kind of stuff. Those
and, Victoria, you asked a question a little bit ago and it popped up and I missed it. So if you could repost that. Oh, yeah. They want to know you believe in them. Absolutely.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, your people are craving this stuff. They want to know you have their back, that you care about them as human beings, not just as a, hey, you show up and your member services or customer service or an accounting, or you go out and sell stuff.
I really believe that sharing financial information with the workforce is a sign of respect. It's that you matter. I believe that you can understand this. I'm going to, like Tom said, we don't necessarily learn this stuff in school. So it's up to us as leaders to try to teach it. You know, we don't have to make it real complex and don't show them 5 or 6 page income statements. We, in the book, we show you how to do this, but it's like sales minus expenses is profit. You know, it's 3 lines. Like, that's like your paycheck comes in, you pay all your bills, and hopefully you have a little money left over. If you're not satisfied with what's left over, either increase the paycheck by adding more value to the business, or, you know, adding more skills, reduce your expenses, and however, you know, we talked about this. So,
wow.
Yeah. And Jill Young has a great book about that. Alex, perhaps you remember the name, just around
the earning advantage. I think Carrie published
that. Oh, yeah. We got it. I got it. It's great.
But it's great. Really about, if you want to earn more, you need to add more value. Mm. And we talked about that in the book as well. That it's not just about you showing up. It's about, hey, what value can I create? And then this gets back to Alex's point, which is when people show up and they add value, and then they can go home at the end of the day and go, I got paid today because I did X. Mm. As opposed to, I went home today, I got paid.
I have a job.
I don't really know why, but they gave me some cash. So I guess I'm doing a good job. And it's about creating that purpose and that sense of mission that Alex is talking about, that sense of accomplishment. And that's what people crave. And that's what we talk about in the book.
I love it. So it's not reward exclusively financially. It's also the purpose and the relevance, but you got to have both. And when you have both, and what it creates, what loyalty.
Yeah, absolutely.
These types of
loyalty,
things.
There's trust. There's a credibility there. The and helps build that sense of camaraderie. There's a sense of that whole, and I don't always love like game and team metaphors or sports metaphors, but it kind of fits. When you win as a team, you celebrate as a team. There's oxytocin flowing. Carrie, you know about this.
And, oh, yeah.
Right? And all the chemistry that's going on in a person's brain who is winning is just, it's like the lizard brain's kicking in, and it's really fun to be part of a winning. It's intrinsically valuable to be part of a winning team, let alone, you know, getting the trophy or, you know, in this case might be incentive. There's that sense of, wow, we did it. Yeah, we made it through the pandemic, and we actually broke, you know, we made some money this year. We thought we were going to lose money, you know, those kind of things.
That's awesome. Well, it's
To that point, there's intrinsic and extrinsic motivators. Mm-hmm. And extrinsic is your paycheck, but probably just as important, if not more important, is the intrinsic, which is what's motivating you to wake up every day and to go to work. And I recall in the late 2000s, LeBron James was on, I think, I don't know if it was the Miami Heat or some other team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he called his team over to the sideline in the third quarter and read them the riot act because they were not performing. And so part of this is that your teams need to be comfortable holding each other accountable. And that's what a really good incentive plan does. And that's what we talk about in ProfitWorks is how do you drive that incentive?
Oh, that's good.
Everybody is holding each other accountable. And Alex, you want to go off on that for a second?
Well, no, I 100% agree. There's peer-to-peer accountability there, which can be created. And again, it goes back to leadership. So great leadership.
So yeah. You're basically saying that if everybody shares in the pot, the true profit works, then if they see colleague X goofing off, not delivering, they're going to get in their face because they own some of that reward. So now it's not the boss having to drive that.
And you know, I have a great story about that from a client of mine in Oklahoma, and their Lincoln, Nebraska manager was, I don't want to say stealing money, but was certainly abusing the system.
Mm.
And one of the employees called the president of the company and said, hey, I just want to let you know this is going on. And the president said, well, why didn't you say anything before? And the employee said, well, now it's coming out of my pocket.
Wow.
Personal. And when you get that type of behavioral change, and we talk a lot about that in the book, Alex and I do, in ProfitWorks, is that we want this to create behavior change.
That's what you started.
It's not a gift. And when you see stuff like that happen, man, it's powerful.
So you would be massively opposed to a Christmas bonus or a holiday bonus just because it's a date on the calendar?
I think so. I mean, there's certainly ways to do that in the right way. They're like from the heart and those types of celebrations. But if you're trying to create a reward system or a system where you're actually shaping employee behavior, that's not going to do it. And because you're not doing the quarterly, you know, updates on what's the score, are we winning or losing, how's the year going, and what things do we need to focus on, or what are our rocks this quarter, and those kind of things. It's just like, hey, here's a ham, right? Or it's fine. I'm not saying don't do that, but that's not what we're talking about.
Behavior. Yeah. You talk about five fundamental truths. Is that something you want to go into today?
Sure. Yeah. You know, one of the first ones we talked a little bit about is self-funding. You know, it has to pay for itself, and you have to believe that. We've talked about causing behavioral change. Mm-hmm. And so if it doesn't create behavioral change, what you've got is people who are doing the same thing they were doing before the incentive plan was rolled out, and now they're just getting more money for it. So mm-hmm. they don't have to change any kind of behavior there. The merit and the cost of living adjustment concept is very important to consider. We were having this conversation today with the team in here, actually, that there has to be practical and rational sort of ranges and bands for different seats or positions in the organization. And Tom kind of came up with thinking, we got to really kind of talk about this within the book. And I thought, this, you know, tell me more. So as we talked about it more, it really makes a lot of sense, because Tom, give the example of like the graphic designer that gets priced out of the band.
Yeah. So, graphic designers working for an ad agency. They've been there for 20 years, and each year they got a 2-3% increase. And all of a sudden they were getting paid $80,000, just make a number up, but they're getting paid $80,000 a year when the market is paying people 40. And were they worth maybe 50 because of their experience? Probably, but they weren't worth 80. And yeah. When hard times hit, what ended up happening is they were the first people that got let go. And so if you want an increase in salary, you know, you need to add more value, mm-hmm. not just show up and do your regular job. And so there's that concept. And I think Alex and I both believe in this very much, that, hey, look, I would much rather come in and go, hey, Kerry, I want to give you a $10,000 raise because you've now taken on this responsibility. And you've proven you can add more value to the company. I'd much rather do that than go, hey, Kerry, you existed for the last year. Here's 1%. That's more motivating for people. Right? So I think that companies have to be aware of, you know, merit increases and COLA, cost of living increases, so they don't price their employees out of the market. And they really focus on, you know, how do those people add value? And that gets to the intrinsic and extrinsic, which we talked about, which is one of the other kind of philosophies that we have, which is you have to have both, right? Intrinsic is, you know, things like, do you like your boss? Do you have friends at work? Extrinsic is, you know, the salaries that you have. And then that leads to our last philosophy, which Alex has talked about a couple of times, which is you have to be willing to share some basic information. Mm. If people don't know how they're doing, they either won't care or they won't act on it. Alex, you had something to add to that?
I was thinking about, like, you know, we're watching a lot of football or even hockey, you know, recently. If these games were played without any kind of score shown, it would not be that interesting. And that's kind of what's happening in businesses that don't share a lot of information is mm-hmm. if you start to gamify it, number one, it can make it fun for people. It gives you a sense of shared purpose around like trying to drive the numbers. And again, we're not trying to make it complex, but to break it down as the simplest form to track that score and then share the score often, even when the score might not be that great. because you can rally for one around rally everybody, say, hey, we're in the hole this quarter, we need to do this X, Y, and Z, and then we can get back to, you know, solid footing in the next quarter. So there's a sense of like shared purpose, I guess, around driving.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things you're touching on there is one of the mistakes that we often see with incentive plans is that people are not sharing information, and therefore nobody knows where the goal is. They don't really know what they need to achieve. And as a result, they're very demotivated. Yeah. The other thing that you and I have seen, Alex, is that sometimes the goals are so ridiculous that they're unattainable.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally. So there are winners and losers. I mean, that's what makes hockey, football, all sports interesting. There's a winning team. There's a losing team. When you do keep score, will you identify some losers? I mean, not that the people are losers, but will you identify the fact that some aren't cutting it? And if so, is that a tough thing? I mean, is that why some people don't want accountability? Because there will be some losers.
Yeah, there are definitely in the leadership position, those are tough conversations, you know, because we care about people. We really do. In around an organization that wants to be the best, that wants to win, that wants to grow, there's only so much tolerance for mediocrity, for you know, just status quo. And so, you know, one of our core values is grow or die. You're dying. And so we want to try to attract people to our organization who also believe that. And that way they're not going to be surprised when we do grow. But folks who don't believe that, or, you know, don't subscribe to those types of sentiments aren't going to be a good fit. Doesn't mean they're bad people, but the best organizations take care of those people issues quickly. They identify them. They try to coach them up to the best of their ability, create some conversation around it, coach. And if it can't change, they got to switch them out. And because we're going this way, right?
And if you don't switch them out, how does that affect the rest of the team?
Yeah, it's gonna anchor, right? It's gonna pull them down, and it's either gonna create a culture of mediocrity, or you're gonna start to lose your superstars. Because they're gonna say, hey, I can do a lot more than this, and this is kind of holding me back. I'm gonna go over here. This organization wants to win, and then you'll lose your best people. And so it's a shame, but superstars know that they're good, and you know, you got to give a lot of attention to superstars, or they will go somewhere else, and they don't want to tolerate dealing with, you know, folks who are holding them back. So
wow, this is good. We have about 10 minutes left. Yeah, go for it.
So I just wanted to add one thing and clear up maybe a misperception. People, incentives, profitability, all of this stuff is not a zero-sum game. Okay, Alex and I approach this from an abundance mindset, which is we got together, we started a company, and we figured that 1 + 1 could equal 15. And that's what we want to do with organizations and with companies. You know, using EOS to really, you know, magnify what people can do. And so it's not you're good or bad. It's what's the right seat for you? How do you fit in your unique ability? How do you get to that point? So I just as a nugget for people listening.
The unique ability, strategic coach term.
Trademark that. Exactly. And yes. You know, it is very much having an abundance mindset and saying, hey, we can do this. And where can you fit in, you know, in the organization? And in the last year, I've had two people come into my sessions and say, I'm not in the right seat. I need help. And when you have that level of vulnerability where they know that they're holding the organization back, that is really powerful stuff. It's pretty cool. Alex, I know you've seen the same thing with some of your clients.
Yeah, it's a path. And in order to get to that level of openness, and in vulnerability, or even you could even call it like fighting for the greater good of the organization to have those types of conversations. It is a journey. And and so there are steps along the way where trust is deposits are being made, where people start to, they're really sleeping on it. They're thinking about it. They might even, you know, worry about it, but then they begin to get comfortable saying, hey, boss or team, here's what I'm thinking. And I don't know if I'm in the right seat. And it's a really powerful conversation because that's an adult conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's just us being human, you know? So yeah. I think
all of that really stems from having an operating system and then having an incentive plan in place where people know they're getting compensated additionally if they do well as a company, right? Wow. I mean, that's what it comes back to.
Why is now a good time, as ridiculous as some people might think it sounds, to talk about incentive plans during a pandemic? What are the, I think this is a major opportunity. Why is it an opportunity?
Well, I've seen it. I've really seen it working well. I mean, the big one, we've talked about them, but let's recap. The big one is rallying that sense of team. Like, we're all in this together. There, if you remember at the beginning in March 13th, Friday the 13th, when COVID like really started hitting, there was a sense first of paralysis and fear. And it morphed over a couple of weeks into, we're all in this together. There was a sense of unity in our isolation, which was ironic. But when you go back to the incentive plan, there is that sense of camaraderie. We're on the same team, you know, from a team metaphor. We're playing this game. We want to win together, celebrate together. We don't want to create silos in our business. It's all one mothership that we want to grow together. And so in this tough time when a lot of businesses, I mean, there's a whole sort of range of success to failures going on here. This is a great tool to use to get people focused on the simple one number profit. Let's drive it. Let's stay alive. Let's set ourselves up for 2021 and beyond and help everybody enroll in achieving our vision. It's really powerful.
It really is, Alex. And I think that interestingly, what you and I saw was almost all of our clients were 4 to 6 weeks ahead of their industry peers in adapting to COVID. So we had clients that literally by the end of February, everybody at home had a computer, they had work from home rules, they were all set up technologically, and they just flipped the switch and boom, they were working from home. And that was because they were all pulling together. And, you know, if you guys have any questions, I'm volunteering 30 minutes of Alex's time for free for anybody listening today.
I love it. I love it. I
didn't do it. But, you know, please email us. Please reach out to us because we are here to help. And it doesn't cost anything for us to spend 30 minutes on the phone with you and just talk through what some of your issues are and how you get this sense of rallying around the cause. And Alex, to your point, what we saw when COVID hit was, wow, you know, our teams just got together. They got tighter. They got closer. And they knocked it out of the park.
I love it. I love it. Well, ProfitWorksLLC.com is the website. We have a bunch of links for the book. It's already an Amazon number one new release. Tom Bauer, Alex Freitag, it was great being with you tonight, and we're going to get a lot of replays. If somebody missed this tonight and they should watch it, tag it, share it, folks.
Thanks so much for listening to the Igniting Souls podcast. As a subscriber, we challenge you to be more than just a passive listener. Show up, build up, and become a member of the tribe. Visit us on the web at carrieoberbrenner.com. Remember, the most powerful weapon on earth is the human soul on fire.